Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 79 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, guys? Man, I'm super stoked for this episode. Not only because, you know, he's in the realm of writing. He's a writer, an author. But I was given one of his very famous books as a gift when I was going through a really dark time in my life when I first moved to Vegas.
Yep.
And it really helped, you know, kind of identify a lot of holes in my game and where I needed to grow with my own personal development. And when we, you know, you chatted with me, you reached out to Robert and said he was going to come on the show. I was super stoked. So who are we bringing on?
Yeah, Robert Greene. Like, when you think that, you know, becoming a New York Times bestseller
is one thing,
is a very highly regarded thing
in America.
In America, and kind of coming to Australia now too.
But what is he?
This guy's a 5-time international bestseller,
dude.
Which means, you know, I'm not like some sort of author expert, but from what I know, and I'm sure that someone might even correct me, this guy has to be in the top 10 authors in the world.
Yes, and I feel because it's this: his audience spans culture. It's not just limited to one culture. America has their culture because, so you got the 48th Law of Power, the Art of Seduction, the 50th Law of Life Mastery that he co-authored with 50 Cent. So this guy, when in terms of business, headspace, and my favorite, nonverbal communication, you know, my education background, my degree is in psychology, and that's one of the things that I've always paid attention to, but until, you know, recently realized that I don't know if it's a skill or a trait. I think it was part of my epigenetics.
Yeah.
Something that had always come easy to me to identify, you know, people in my room or in the room. And he talks about, he loves nonverbal communication and knowing how to utilize that to your strengths.
It actually is very interesting. So, guys, while you were listening to us, I'm sure you might have a mobile device or a desktop in front of you. Google him. Have a look what he looks like.
Yeah.
He's a normal, he's what, 50-year-old white male, American. Yeah.
Not even been so in the game
this
that
is,
long.
This is not me creating any sort of racial thing like that, but we've got rappers, guys like 50 Cent, Jay-Z, Kanye. They quote him in their songs.
Yeah, he's hip-hop culture, man.
We've got other guys like Will Smith. We've got Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh constantly, who's, if you don't know, he's one of the superstars of the NBA playing for the Miami Heat.
Oh, world champion.
And he constantly quotes Robert Greene, and I think he said that, I think it was the 33 Strategies of War that he said was his favorite book.
And the thing about also the thing that I learned through Robert before this interview, you know, I like to think authors that I read or books I read or, you know, speakers that I listen to, they're my mentors, they're my coaches. I don't have to meet these people to learn from them. And what I learned from Robert long ago was, one, that the language that were delivered by the media, like the word war. For me, when, you know, if I take myself back to that 22-year-old impulsive, uneducated kid, I hear war, I only think of one thing. I think of guns, bloodshed, pillaging, and dominating. The word war has a lot of different meanings to it.
Yeah.
And it's not just what you think. And so Green's taken a lot of heat from religious circles for his titles. I'd like to ask these people who give him heat if they've ever read his books.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting thing. You do get that a lot, that people take heat because of the actual name.
Yeah,
they don't read what the actual
the framework is,
or the book actually is, and there is more to that because
he uses the word power and seduction.
Yeah, exactly right, and you know, there's 48 laws of power, but I'm sure he doesn't
practice
48 laws of power. But he's giving you an open perspective for you to find your own path.
So, I like what he, you know, what research and his ideas came from, basically finding global leaders from all of time, from the beginning of time, and figuring out their mental capacity and their psychological behavioral patterns and identifying the strengths, and then correlating that with chapters in the book and correlating that with techniques that you could use. For instance, the Art of Seduction, walking into a room, maybe you're in an interview, maybe you're on a first date, and being able to, you know, apply these tools to favor you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Neil Strauss is The Game.
Yeah.
Some of that.
Neil Strauss
actually
is a savage as well.
Oh, big time savage.
Have they worked together?
Well, I think he quotes him quite a bit in The Game from memory. I haven't read The Game for quite a while. I read it in my early 20s.
Okay. I know, those guys are huge in the business, entrepreneurial world. Shout out to Jose Lopez. I know he's a local. He's in the stocks in Sydney.
Yeah, he works for an FX company. So
yeah, so
he's in finance.
This is another dude that just messaged me out of the blue because he saw the video we put up. We were interviewing Robert Green, and it just goes to show you cultural. I mean, Jose grew up in Mexico, lives in Sydney, Australia, does stocks, right, you know, and he knew. I didn't even know the guy. He came up to me because he saw a video I put on social media, and now I'm friends with him because of Robert Green.
Nah, he's a cool dude.
Yeah. But I'm stoked to learn from this guy, see if he's still working, see what motivates him. And, dude, he's worked. It wasn't like, you know, he was young and he started writing and he's been a writer. No, this dude done like 70 different jobs.
Yeah, he's a savage.
Traveled the world. Yeah, so.
Big savage. But we'll get him on in a couple minutes' time. Guys, just remember, check out our free ebook that we've got online. It's our abs ebook that me and Johnny use for our, you know,
core ab popping
every single day. So we've got our little schedule that we've run and we've put it on paper for you guys. And we've also created a little sample meal plans because you can't just have the training. You've got to have that nutrition too.
Yeah, download that, man. Go to our website, visionboardpodcast.com/ebook. It's a free download. It takes 10 seconds straight to your inbox. I really am a big believer that you could tell our overall health and our overall strength starts from our core. You don't have to have a six-pack to be healthy, but what we like to do is outline, you know, give you a little easy strategy, simplified things to where if you want to take it to the next level, we're here to help. Also, this episode of the Vision Board is brought to you by Onnit. Onnit is a human optimization brand. They specialize in basically creating products, tools, tricks of the trade to help you optimize your potential and have you working, you know, at your peak. On their store, you're going to find merchandise. You're going to find stories of what their products mean, what the brand stands for. When you're proceeding to their checkout, use code word Vision Board to receive 10% off of all of your purchases.
Yeah, I love it. So, guys, check out Onnit. I'm using currently the Buffalo Warrior bars, which is great, especially
if Warrior.
You need snacks on the run. It's got 14 grams protein. I think the bars were about $4 each, so get that. Also using Alpha Brain, which has been quite, like I said in the last episode, my focus is huge right now. Like before, I could only focus 45 to 60 minutes. Now I've actually got a couple of hours focus in me now, so I'm actually quite thrilled to actually take them. So check it out for yourself. That's my best advice. You know, it's always everyone's body's different. So check that out. Also, Dolce Way, I use that after my workouts. All right, guys. Well, we've got Robert Green on the line, so here he is.
Yes, sir.
All right, our special guest is a world-renowned author. He has written 5 acclaimed international bestsellers, which includes The 48 Laws of Power, The Art of Seduction, 33 Strategies of War, The 50th Law, and Mastery. We welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, Robert Green. Robert, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Tristan. My pleasure.
Robert, once again, thank you for your time. We know time is valuable, so I thank you and welcome you to our show. Could you share with our listeners and our fans a little bit about maybe projects that you're working on now, something that, you know, behind the scenes that, you know, you're doing?
Well, most prominently, most of my time is taken up with my 6th book, which is called tentatively now The Laws of Human Nature, and it's a little bit of an expansion of a chapter in my mastery book on social intelligence. I'm sort of looking at these kind of timeless elements about people, elements in human nature, such as our propensity to feel envy, our irrational tendencies, tendencies towards grandiosity, the role that character plays in our behavior, how we tend to have patterns of behavior that repeat. And so each chapter is kind of a look at sort of a part of human nature that can get you into trouble. And so you can have a better sense of understanding difficult or weird people in your life. Because I feel like a lot of the problems that we have come from misunderstanding that the people we deal with, we really don't know what is motivating them. So I want to kind of help you understand your fellow humans on a higher level. And then I'm also working on a television version of the 48 Laws, but that's a little bit further away.
Interesting.
With how we react with the people around us in our impulses and behaviors, is this something like in the piece that you said you're working on that you feel is more of a
you know, societal or environmental thing, like our habitat, or are these like behaviors that are ingrained in us through genetics and things like that?
Well, I would say, in my opinion, it's a lot of it is our qualities that are ingrained in us. It's the way our brains are wired. It's something that goes back. Some of these behavior patterns go back to primates, things like envy, or to hunter-gatherer cultures. Some of them are much more recent. And, of course, our environment and your family and your experiences play a large role. But I'm trying to maintain that we're given this sort of clay that each one of us has. Obviously, things have changed, internet technology. But essentially, human nature tends to take over whatever we create. So the internet starts as this incredible realm of freedom where people get to sort of express themselves and you can buy whatever you want. And slowly, slowly over the course of year after year, human nature kind of tends to alter it and warp it. It's almost like we can't help these particular tendencies that are ingrained in us. Now, some people disagree with this. Some people think that there is no such thing as human nature, that it's something constantly evolving and that culture plays a much larger role. I happen to fall more on the side of genetics and certain qualities that are deeply, deeply ingrained in us. And I think the election, for instance, here in the States has been a master laboratory for me, sort of proving my thesis about things like that. So that's where I fall on the question.
Yeah, just touching on the election, how is the reaction been in your sort of area? Like, what's the feedback been in where you live?
Well, we're all kind of trying to. It's sort of a shock.
Yeah.
You know, how growing up in the United States, as I have, I'm 57, so the 60s and the 70s were my formative years. But, you know, you had a certain vision of the United States that you grew up with. And he shook all of that up, went against the grain, disrupted it in not a good way. And so it's almost like you're in mourning for your own country and for its values and for things that you believed in. Now, we'll see what happens moving forward, but a lot of us are in shock. I remember in 1980 when Ronald Reagan won the election, it was a similar feeling for many of us. I'm more on the left side and a Democrat, but more on the left. And, you know, we survived. But my great concern is things like global warming, the environment, and Trump and his team, if they're in for 4 or 8 years, we might never, ever recover from the things that they're planning to do. So I personally, and a lot of my friends, we're kind of in a state of shock.
Yeah. Just back to your new book, and just in general, when you try to launch a new book, I was just intrigued, just your thought pattern behind, are you writing the book to fulfill your own purpose, or are you writing for a genre that you've picked out, like a certain segment in the actual community?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm writing because I feel like I have a purpose. So I wrote Mastery for a definite purpose, which was I was worried that people don't understand what it takes to make something and make something well, and what true fulfillment in life could be like, and all sorts of misconceptions about genius and what it takes to become successful. And the new book is also a kind of a mission, because I feel like we're in denial about a lot of things about human nature. We believe that we're better than we are. It's like that postcard you sometimes see of a cat staring into a mirror and seeing a tiger in the mirror. A lot of people imagine ourselves to be this incredibly angelic, brilliant animal. And I believe that there's actually a very dark side to human nature, and what we need to do is be aware and be conscious of this, and it's in each and every one of us, so that we can all of us become better human beings by, in some ways, overcoming our nature. So I'm on a mission. I want to educate people. I think there's something also very helpful in the book, where I have a chapter, for instance, people have asked me this for years. I talk a lot about nonverbal communication and body language and, you know, detecting signs that people emit from what's really going on behind the facade that they present. And I'm really going deep into that book, giving you a lot of material, a kind of a decoding guide, how to decode the behavior and the nonverbal signs you receive from people. So I'm writing this just to sort of help people as much as possible.
Robert, was this one of the things when you talk about digging deep in the body language and the mannerisms and identifying, you know, behaviors? I'll use myself as, for an example. When I was a kid, you know, I can remember my family going to the Midwestern Mall during Christmas, and my father would sit down with me as my sisters and mother would shop. And as people would walk by, he would show me, like, this couple's holding hands, and he would talk about that means that sort of thing. And that really interests me, you know, my education in psychology. Was this something that happened to you when you were younger that got you intrigued in, you know, the whole understanding of the human movement and the, I guess, identifying things that maybe would suit you in certain social settings with the whole, you know, I don't want to say one-upping. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, identifying, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's several elements to that. I mean, in if you're talking about one-upmanship, you know, when you're playing poker or you're in a game where you're trying to read the mind of your competitor, or you're Musashi, the Book of Five Rings, and you're a samurai sword fighter and you're reading the eyes of your opponent, well, obviously, those are very important issues. And for the new book, I kind of devoured several texts on from poker, reading tells and body language. There's a huge literature out there on nonverbal communication. So obviously I'm coming at it from a slightly different angle. But also I've been obsessed with it for many, many years because I'm somebody that likes to observe people and a kind of an intuitive feel. And I like to read people, and sometimes it's hard. Sometimes your own internal monologue is kind of blocking it out, or your own insecurities. But when, you know, we've all had that moment where we're drunk, had a little bit too much wine, and we've kind of lost that insecurity, and we're paying deep attention, and suddenly we see something, and it's kind of exciting and interesting. I'm always looking at people's expressions, and sometimes it's unconscious. You're not really aware of what you're doing. But when I wrote the book, I realized that I'm absolutely fascinated by the subject, and it's endless. You could spend your whole life delving into it. I happen to highlight one man who was probably the greatest reader of nonverbal communication that ever lived, Milton Erickson, psychologist. And the idea is that some people are absolutely gifted with the ability to read people on a much higher level. It doesn't mean that all of us can't improve, and I'm not on that level, but I'm fascinated by the fact that some people have a really brilliant sense and observational skills, and I sort of want to share a lot of that with my readers.
Is this something, so for instance, you know, the person, you're at a party and somebody walks into a room and you kind of look at your buddies and you're like, man, I kind of wish this person didn't walk in. Or same scenario, but someone walks in and you're like, man, I'm super stoked that they came. Is it more like an energy, like being super sensitive or aware of the energy around you? Or is it like an awareness of the physical person's body? What's your opinion on that?
Well, there's all sorts of aspects to that. People do have an energy. They do have a overall what we might call a gestalt, where there's something open about them or something very closed, or something, people who are extremely ambitious have a certain kind of body language. And so, you know, that's one very important aspect. But a lot of times, you know, the main theory behind this, if I can go into it a little bit, is that people don't are essentially wearing a mask in a social environment out of correctness, out of politeness. They're not telling you what they really think about you. You generally are a lot more polite in social situations. And we learn to smile. We learn to carry ourselves a certain way. And it's all pretty nondescript. It's like almost like everybody's pretty much doing the same thing. And you're not going to read or catch very much if that's all you're looking at. But behind it, because we are animals, and because for millions of years our ancestors were communicating to one another on a nonverbal level, and we give out a lot of information in our gestures, in our expressions, in the way we walk, etc., we are constantly oozing, what Freud said, we're oozing our secrets into the world through this other language. But what happens when you're in a social situation like the one you describe, you tend to either be listening to yourself and worried about, you know, what other people think of you, or you're listening just to what they say. And you have to train yourself to pay attention to people's behavior, to the nonverbal cues that they give out. And the other thing is, you can misread people on this level. It's not something that is natural to people. You have to develop it as a skill. You have to learn how to observe, and you have to see things that repeat. If one time you catch an expression and you think that that means that person dislikes you, it just could be that suddenly the thought of their mother whom they don't like suddenly flashed on their mind and they gave you that nonverbal cue and you took it personally. So you have to learn this skill and learn this language. It's not something that comes in an instant. But I tell you, it's a fascinating game once you start becoming interested in it.
Yeah. Robert, I heard you use the word obsessed before. I was really intrigued. Is that what makes your work so good?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, probably, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist, for better or for worse. So when I'm writing a book on mastery, for instance, I really want to nail it. I really want to get deep as possible into the subject. I want to read as much as I can about the neuroscience and read as many biographies, because I want to get to the reality of what I'm describing. I find a lot of books, for me, are unsatisfying because I feel like the writer has an idea but hasn't gone deep enough into it and has kind of sort of taken an easy route and just sort of gives out, maybe the first chapter has a few interesting ideas, but after that, there's nothing really there. It's kind of like bread that doesn't have any flavor to it. You know, there's just sort of white bread that doesn't do anything for you.
Yeah.
And so I don't like to do that. I like to really try and, obviously I can't 100% succeed, but I want to get to the heart of it. And so if I'm writing about human nature, I'm writing a chapter right now about grandiosity, our propensity to think that we are much better than we actually are in whatever field. I really, really, really want to make it understandable and make people see, oh, that's what's going on with my friend. That's the problem this boss is having, so that you can really relate it to your life and make it as real and practical as possible. And that takes a lot of mental grinding on my part, thinking.
Yeah. Rob, how long does it take you to actually, like, from start to finish, actually write a book? Because is it something that you put a time limit on for accountability? Like, how does that process work?
Well, I wish, but this book is taking longer. I think in the end it will take 4 years.
Wow.
Over 2 years of intense research, and then it's taking longer than I thought. Power, the 48 Laws of Power took only 2 years. I was a lot younger. I don't know why. I can almost not believe that that happened. The other books generally took 3 years. Mastery took a little over 3 years. So I'm slowing down. It's age or something's going on, but this one will. I do think my next book, though, I'm going to make it a lot shorter and faster. I've kind of, this will be my last big book for a while, I think.
Robert, it's written that, you know, when you were a younger man, you had a lot of different jobs with a lot of different titles. And then when you got, you know, your writing started taking off and you created momentum to where, you know, you are today, Robert Greene, the international bestseller. For our listeners at home, if you could take yourself back to those times before you were a published author, what were those characteristic traits that you possessed that allowed you to persevere and overcome adversity to get where you are today?
Well, you know, sometimes I was a little bit worried about myself. I, you know, as I've said in many like my TED talk, for instance, I always knew I wanted to be a writer from very early on in life. So that helped a lot. And I tried my hand at many different kinds of writing, journalism, Hollywood screenwriting, and not writing novels, etc. And nothing really quite worked. And I, as you know, I've had over 60 different jobs in order to support myself. I did all kinds of things, including working at a detective agency for a while, and doing a construction job and working in a hotel in Europe, and all these different jobs to support myself. So I was constantly writing, constantly trying to figure it out. Moments of despair, moments of not having enough money in the bank account. And then when I was 36, 35 years old, I met a man who ended up being the producer packager of my books, Yost Elfers. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was in Hollywood and very unhappy with my career at that point. And he asked me for a book idea. And I kind of improvised, if I had any book ideas, and I kind of improvised what would turn into the 48 Laws of Power. And it was just sort of good luck that I met this man and that he asked me that question. I don't know what would have happened if I probably maybe would have eventually found my way to writing books, but it was quite fortunate because at that moment I had a lot of experience, writing, a lot of experience researching. And it was just a confluence of good fortune where now I could take all of my skills and pour it into this book. And I was so motivated to make the 48 Laws of Power succeed that I think for those 2 years, I just lived and breathed that book. And, you know, the lesson I try and tell people is if you know more or less what you're gifted at, what you more or less want to do, and you keep trying at different angles, keep hitting away at that shield, keep trying to poke a hole in it, eventually something will happen. Mm. You will meet that right person. Something will come together. As long as you're not wasting all your time, as long as you're accumulating a valuable skills, you'll find, like I found, the perfect place to exploit them, to use them.
And what do you feel personally that your most valuable skill is? Let's say other than writing.
you mean
in terms of, you know, when you were at that moment of getting to where you needed to go, the self-belief was there. Because I feel a lot of the people Tristan and I talk to were coaches, our day job are coaches, and I feel a lot of people who struggle, they get these moments of adversity, and I think the difference is people who succeed or get to a certain level, they're able to use it as like a catapult or a catalyst for growth. And from the different from the different people we speak to, each person has a different, I guess, identifiable personal trait that allowed them to get through that.
Well, I mean, I think it helps to be ambitious. I was very ambitious, not in the sense of making a lot of money. I was very ambitious to succeed at writing and make my name at writing. So I wasn't going to give up. Now, another 5 years of not succeeding, and maybe I would have hit the bottle, and that would have been the end of it. But I was pretty damn persistent, and I kept thinking, I had faith in myself. I had faith that there was something there, that I had the material for something. I hadn't figured it out. But, you know, eventually I would figure it out. It's hard because you're going back in time, you know, for me over 20 years ago, really almost, to remember my mindset back then. I do remember moments of being quite depressed and worried, but somehow I always dragged my way out of it and kept trying and trying and trying. So if you, as I said in Mastery, if you kind of know what you were meant to accomplish in life, if you're clear about that, that really, really helps a lot, because then you know that, okay, I'm really good at working with people and I've had these different jobs managing them and nothing has really come to fruition for that's lucrative or powerful, but I know I'm good at it. So you'll keep trying. you'll keep moving into other jobs that allow you to hone that skill. It really helps because if you don't know what it is that you're meant to do in life, it's like a ship without a rudder. You know, you're never going to find where your port or where you're meant to be. So I think that's kind of what held me together, was my love of writing and my persistence.
Yeah. Robert, do you believe in fate?
Fate?
Yeah.
Well, in the sense of things kind of just occur. And there are many ways to explain fate, but I have written in my book, in one of my books, about the concept of amor fati, the love of fate, where you sort of embrace whatever happens. So you came into this world, you didn't decide to be born. You didn't decide to be born in Australia in the 1990s or 80s. Things are just there. You have so little control of them. 99.9% of the things around you, that is fate. Those are things that were kind of set, that it's almost like karma. It's been happening since the beginning of time, and it's a great feeling, powerful, empowering feeling, to accept a lot of this and not wish things were otherwise, and to sort of make the most of each circumstance and not whine and complain and get down on yourself. Just see it as fate, mm-hmm. and to accept it and to work with it. The other aspect of it, which is something I write about in my new book, is there's a famous expression by the ancient philosopher Heraclitus called, he says, character is fate. And the idea in that is you're born with a certain kind of a character, certain traits, something genetic, something that comes from your parents. And it's like who you are. It's this sort of essential part. And it causes you to repeat things in life. And I meant in this chapter, which is on character, is you have patterns. And if you looked at it and studied it, you would see every 5 years this happens. Every 3 years, you always fall in love with the same kind of woman. Your career has to go in this particular pattern. That's another element of fate that almost comes from our genetic code, and becoming aware of it, becoming aware of your patterns, of your character, of this sort of element of fate, gives you the possibility to possibly alter it in some way. So those are the two elements of fate that I definitely believe in.
Could you share with us a little bit, maybe some tips? You know, some of our, you know, we write for our websites, and creativity, in my opinion, is like super, super important to create momentum. When there's times that you struggle with this, or do you have a system for this, or is it something that just comes to you in the fingertips, just grab the pen, you start writing? Do you have processes that, you know, you tell yourself, Robert, all right, I'm going to do this, this, and this, because I know it's going to help me be more creative?
Well, I kind of poured all of my ideas into this one chapter in Mastery, which is on creativity. And my idea in that was, we've all had the experience, this is sort of part of the preface to Mastery, we've all had the experience, or most of us have, where we're working at a job, or we're in college, and we have this deadline, and we don't have enough time to finish what we're doing, and we have to work really intensely in order to make that deadline. In a week, we have to do what normally we would try to do in a month. In that intense period, we suddenly find that we're a lot more creative. Like, ideas are coming to us when we're showering, when we're shaving, when we're about to go to sleep, when we wake up, and good ideas. And it's sort of that intensity where you have a lot of thoughts, a lot of research, and you have to get things done, and your mind is clicking into another gear. Well, that'll happen to you naturally in the course of your career if you spend 10 years, if you put in the proverbial 10,000 hours researching your field, delving into it, practicing, getting a lot of experience, I'm not saying that you cannot be creative with before that moment, but you're going to end. You're going to reach a level where creativity comes to you naturally when you have a certain high level of experience. Now, that won't happen to everyone because the mind is like a muscle. It tends to tighten with the years. So you could get a lot of experience in whatever field, and then you could become very conventional with all of your knowledge, and you're not creative. So there are what I call kind of like almost like yoga exercises to loosen up the mind so that with your experience and your study, you can still be loose and fluid. And I compare it to the blending of the child's mind with the adult. Children, as we know, are incredibly imaginative and creative. They'll come up with associations of ideas that are just really, wow, how did they ever think of that? And we were like that at one point. But children don't have any real knowledge of the world. They don't have any real experience. Creativity is to me the wedding, the blending of your adult, experienced, practical mind with that kind of fluidity that a child has. And I give my book many exercises so that you, if you do go through the process I describe in Mastery, that you will be able to loosen up your mind and not think in such a conventional manner. To me, that's kind of the ultimate in creativity. In writing a book that I'm in now, for instance, my labor is so intense, and sometimes I get very frustrated. And, you know, you can do exercises and things where you step away and you try something else. And the moment you step away, suddenly a great idea comes to you. It's a very kind of classic scenario. So there are tricks that I play when I feel a little bit blocked. But mostly it's a function of intensity, like you've got to get something done, and your level of experience and your ability to keep your mind fluid and open and letting in more possibilities. I give the example in my talks of Louis Pasteur and the chickens that he had injected with cholera, and suddenly for some reason some chickens didn't die, and why, and nobody else could figure it out. And the only reason Pasteur figured it out and created immunology was because he thought of more different possible explanations for what had happened. Instead of going through A, B, C, the usual things that could explain it, he went A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And finally on G, he hit the right idea. That's often all that it takes to be truly creative. One last thing is something that struck me when Steve Jobs said that the mind tends to work in these grooves, like the grooves on a record going around and around, the same circle. The game in creativity is to get out of that circle and to suddenly come at your problem from different angles. Basically, I'm saying the same thing I just said before. Mm-hmm. You're considering more possibilities. You're opening your mind to different ways of attacking the problem.
Go on.
No. No, you go ahead.
I just wanted to add, to further talk about that. I was reading an article about a really famous mixed martial artist, and it was like his best fight. He was perfect. And in the interview, he said that he had to actually go back and watch it because he didn't remember any of it. So When you get into that, when you pick the pen up or you're typing and you get into that flow state and you're just in the zone, do you feel that that's a skill? That's something you could tap into, or that's something that just occurs with like fruition of hard work and things like that?
You can't really reproduce it at will all of the time. If you could, you'd be Shakespeare or whomever. You'd be the greatest person in your field ever. It comes and it goes. It ebbs and it flows. There are going to be, even if you're Einstein, there are going to be moments of dullness where the brain isn't clicking. That mixed martial artist, even with all of his experience, his next fight, suddenly it's not there. It comes and it goes. We could try and figure out why it comes and goes. I don't think we'll ever really know the answer, but the main thing we do know is it came to your mixed martial artist, the feeling of flow, because of his level, his deep level of experience. If he was 18 years old and in his first fight, those moments of really kind of figuring it out are much less likely to happen. So, you know, I have in the book, I talk about Freddie Roach, who was a great boxing trainer, and he also trains mixed martial artists. He says that a boxer gets a feeling for the ring so that he kind of knows, he can anticipate the whole pattern of the fight and not just be sitting there punching, but he's thinking ahead, not only to this round, but the next round. And he's using the ring in this very creative manner, kind of pushing the other fighter in exactly this pattern that he wants. That's high-level thinking that comes from years of experience and practice that he gives to his fighters. The chess master, Bobby Fischer, had played so many games of chess that he had a feel for the game where he could sense 40 moves ahead what was going to happen. And sort of similar to maybe what your martial artist was experiencing. Now, he's not going to feel that in every game, but he feels it fairly often because of how many patterns he has learned and absorbed. And science has covered this ad infinitum. It's a fascinating subject. The people who study the whole 10,000 hours phenomenon looked very deeply at chess masters and discovered that's how the 10,000 hour rule came up, was, wow, after generally close to 10,000 hours, people who play chess seem to enter another level of creative thinking. And so I'm not denying that when you're younger, you're not going to have bursts of creativity. And there are artists that we can point to in music or whatever, certainly. But you're going to have it more under control, and you're going to have it happen more often with your level of experience.
We hope you're enjoying the episode with Robert Green. Be sure to check out our previous episodes with the likes of Rich Roll, Sean Stevenson, Sam Ovens, and Evander Holyfield. Remember to subscribe to the Vision Board podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review. Now back to the show. Robert, for someone, you know, as brilliantly talented and creative as yourself, who's your major influences and kind of, what sort of books are you reading? Like, for example, like I've just bought one of your books, so I'm about to start. I'm just about to finish The Alchemist. Johnny, you like Eckhart Tolle? Right?
Yeah, Power of Now, Stillness Speaks, things like that, developmental books.
Yeah, so in terms of just giving us a little bit of insight into yourself, who do you kind of turn to for that influence and inspiration?
Well, I don't really. I mean, it sounds egotistical, but to write like one of my books, you know, I'm absorbing hundreds of resource material. For this book, I did a lot of reading on psychology. So there isn't really like one or two or three people that have had a huge impact on me. There's a lot of different writers. It depends on each book. I mentioned, for instance, Milton Erickson, who I highly recommend that people check out his books. I can't remember the title of the book that I'm using here. It's on my shelf. I can get it for you before I get it hang up.
Definitely do that.
Well, actually, I can look online while we're talking. He was the master of nonverbal communication. And he was sort of the genius from which NLP developed all of his theories. I mean, I think he's more brilliant than the NLP people, but he's the person that sort of inspired it. He's a master at understanding people's psychology. So for my new book, if I had to point people towards one book that really excited me, it would be this one. I'm about to give it to you. He also was here it is, My Voice Will Go With You, the teaching tales of Milton Erickson.
There you go.
He's also one of the leading founders of hypnosis therapy. He was practicing hypnosis back in the 1920s, 30s. So anyway, that would be one great book that I would be happy to recommend.
Awesome. I just want to pick your brain a little bit on the 50th Law. I just want to get your insights. You know, the book's obviously about 50 Cent and his experience growing up. And what I want to ask you is, what do you think the main thing that 50 Cent learned from yourself?
What he learned from me?
Yeah.
Wow. You'd have to ask him on that.
Did he ever become, you know, repetitive in conversation, wanting to know different things about yourself? Or was it only like one-way traffic, you wanting to know about him? Or was it kind of him asking you stuff as well?
We had endless conversations. And he got to talk about things that he normally wasn't able to talk about. It was almost sort of like therapy for him.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a position of power like that and you're under scrutiny, you don't reveal your vulnerabilities, your weaknesses, things about your early childhood to people because you're worried that, you know, they're going to take it the wrong way. So obviously knowing that he would see whatever I wrote and I wouldn't violate his trust, he opened up to me and talked about his relationship to his mother who died, was murdered when he was very young. And, you know, other things like that. So, you know, I'm not quite sure. We went into the book after many hours of talking with him. I decided that really what this book should be about is his relationship to fear, which is what the 50th Law is about.
Yeah.
There's 10 chapters or 10 meditations on 10 different kinds of fear that you have in your life, and everybody has them. And he is on a higher level. I think in discussing that and putting the book together, he learned things about himself that he had never really thought about. So in talking about and putting the book together, we were kind of revealing to ourselves why he was able, out of all of the millions of people who grew up in Southside Queens, a pretty miserable part of the world in many ways, why was he able to rise up from being a street drug dealer to a great rap artist to a great entrepreneur?
Yeah.
No, I think we figured it out to kind of together. I think he learned a lot on that level, you know. But you know, he has an intuitive feel. I tell people, you know, when it comes to like the 48 laws of power, he's like a living, walking embodiment of it. He's got a great kind of, maybe it's street smarts or whatever. So he knows a lot of these things almost sort of intuitively.
How did it come together? Did he reach out to you, or did you reach out to him?
Well, he reached out to me. The person who is his sort of literary agent, because he wrote he had an autobiography, which I think is an excellent book. I recommend it to everybody. Called From Pieces to Weight, really good book. Anyway, his literary agent contacted me and said, would you like to meet 50? He's a big fan of the 48 laws. And this was back in 06, I believe.
Yeah.
I said, sure. So I went to New York and I met him and his crew at a steakhouse in Manhattan. And, you know, I was a little bit, I wouldn't say intimidated, but a little bit maybe.
You definitely were out of your comfort zone.
Well,
were
yeah,
you?
I guess so.
I would have loved to see footage of that dinner.
Well, there it doesn't exist. It was a lunch.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist. you know, but I have very fond memories of it. He was there with his son, Marquise, who at the time was maybe 10, 11. Marquise had the most amazing bling on him for an 11-year-old that I'd ever seen. You know, incredible rings and bracelets. And 50 himself was wearing this insane, like, diamond bracelet thing. So, you know, it was a little bit out of my normal comfort zone, but he and I hit it off. Similar way of thinking about strategy. What is the game people are playing? At the time, he was going through a big beef with game.
Yeah.
And so we were sort of analyzing that. from a kind of a strategic perspective. And so my thought coming from that meeting was, we think alike. I liked him. He's not a celebrity like you would think. He's very down to earth, very normal, very easy to talk to, and he listens to you. I'm not a big person into celebrity, so I was sort of impressed with his kind of candor. And I thought, well, maybe it would be really interesting to bring our two very different worlds together. And so I started discussing that with the agent. And they were amazingly open. Now, what they said, well, I said, I don't know what the book would be. Let 50 and I hang out. Give me access to him. And then I'll come to you with what I think the book is about. And that's sort of how it evolved.
And on the contrary, what would you say that you learned from him?
Well, I learned the value of fearlessness. I learned, little things like I would be in a meet. No, we were talking, and he said, Robert, I'm not trying to imitate him, but he said, when you're talking, you tend to nod your head a lot. And, I find that a lot of people, sometimes people do that. And in meetings, important meetings, I really control that because it's very powerful. And, wow, you're right. You're right. I do that. And it isn't very, it's not a sense of control. It maybe is even a nervous habit. So, okay. And then I watched him in meetings and I watched him in crises and kind of his Zen calmness. Well, wow, that's very impressive. If I could get to be that confident and that calm, it really has a power as a leader. I would like to be able to be more like that. And so, I learned kind of lessons about the fearlessness that we talked about isn't kind of an aggressive fearlessness where you like go up to someone and want to punch them in the face. It's more a very quiet calmness, accepting things, not letting things bother you. So I saw him in the middle of a terrible crisis where one of his latest videos before the album got released, got leaked to the internet and was like going to ruin their whole marketing campaign. And he just didn't sweat a bit. Yeah. Just came up with okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this, this, and this. Wow. I think that comes from being shot in the face and nearly dying and coming out of it gives you a sense, well, nothing really is really as bad as that. And not all of us can obviously have that experience. But the power of being calm, it is just unbelievable as far as the ability, if you keep your cool, suddenly you can think. And while everyone else around you, which was happening at that moment when I was there, is like losing their heads and running around, that person that's not suddenly can think and can come up with something creative. So these are little things I learned from him.
That reminds me of one of my favorite poems by Kipling, If, the stanza about when all things around you are crumbling, right. You hold your wits about you. Yeah, it's...
Right.
Roland, I just want to talk to you about satisfaction, because just looking at all your work and just having a look on the internet, you've got rappers like 50 Cent, Jay-Z, Kanye quoting you in songs. You've got other people like Brian Grazer, Chris Bosh, Will Smith mentioning all your books as motivation in their life. Does that make you, how does that feel to you in terms of satisfaction?
Well, it's a good confirmation that the books have some truth to them and have some power to them. I can't deny that it's a nice feeling. You can get a little drunk on that stuff.
Yeah.
Where if it's not coming, you feel a little bit empty. So I learned to get my satisfaction from doing the best that I can. So, mastery, I gave it all of my blood and guts and wrote what I thought was what I wanted to write. And that gives me satisfaction, and I can move on. So getting confirmation from celebrities or people in culture is just like a cherry on top of the sundae, It's a nice added bonus that really is nice. But I'll tell you, it's also almost more satisfying, or maybe almost as satisfying, is getting emails from everyday people who say, you know, I used your books to do this incredible thing and change my life, and you really helped turn me around. That is, maybe in some ways, is more satisfying, you know. And I get a lot more of those than the celebrity stuff.
Yeah, well, you're touching the wider world, so I guess for you to influence people in that way, it's quite a feat for yourself. Hey, Robert, I know your time is quite valuable, so we're just going to leave you on a light-hearted note. Now, it's a personality question we like to ask all our guests. Now, Robert Green, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites to the dinner party. It can be anyone, dead or alive. It just can't be anyone that's a family member or a friend. Who are you inviting?
Well, I'd probably invite Donald Trump so that I could kind of maybe try and figure him out and sort of see what's happening behind his mask from a human nature point of view, writing as I am about narcissism in one chapter and grandiosity. I feel like I could learn something from him, kind of figure him out. I'd probably invite someone like Malcolm Gladwell, who I respect a lot. That's a writer, actually, I should have mentioned, that I respect a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, who else? I'd probably have to put an athlete on there because I love sports, but I'd have to figure out who would be the modern Muhammad Ali. I'm into people who master the mental side of sports. You know, obviously Michael Jordan was the most gifted athletically basketball player in many generations, but he mastered the mental side. He was tough as nails where he is. Maybe he would be that person.
What's your opinion on someone like a Floyd Mayweather?
Well, I met Floyd because he at one time was good friends with 50 Cent. They had a falling out.
Yeah.
And obviously, for Mastery, I interviewed Freddie Roach, who, you know, those are kind of enemies.
Yeah.
He's an incredible boxer of the old school variety of the sweet science part. He boxes. He's not a coward. He can punch with a lot of power, but he's a defensive boxer.
Yeah, he is.
And you know, boxing is an amazing sport in that it's almost like the equivalent of samurai warriors, where the sword fight, you know, you're in a moment where it's life or death. How do you control your mind in such moments? It's kind of something that fascinates me. Boxing isn't life or death, but you're getting your face pounded, your body pounded. How do you keep your mind straight? Freddie Roach told me he was really bad at that. He would get all emotional and angry, and all of his strategy would go out the window. And then he learned that he had to get his boxers to master that part of it. So obviously Floyd is that kind of element of fear where you're able to get into the ring. I can't even imagine it, where you're still able to think and put your plan into place while taking such punishment. So yeah, Floyd could be somebody like that, or it could be a football player, maybe a Tom Brady type. Quarterbacks kind of fascinate me. And I've met several football players, and they're very, particularly quarterbacks, very heady intellectual types, because there's a lot of thinking going on. So maybe something like that. I'd have to try and get a woman in the group, so I don't know who that would be right now. I don't know.
Oprah?
I have to think about that. Yeah, something of that order. People, I know who I'd want, who I'd invite, along with Donald Trump. The person that kind of fascinates me is Putin.
Putin, yeah.
Vladimir Putin. I know people who've met him. I've worked with people in the diplomatic corps who met him, have had meetings with him. How inscrutable he is. He's clearly a very sneaky guy. So I would have Putin and Trump there for sure. I'd have a sports person there. I'd have maybe Malcolm Gladwell there, and then maybe a woman of some sort or something. I don't know yet, but that's sort of more or less. It would be a weird party, I can tell you that.
Robert Greene, thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing this space with us. Thank you for sharing these stories. And then also for our listeners at home, could you let everyone know where to find you if they want to read your books, what you're currently doing, how they get a hold of you if they want to contact you and buy your books?
Yeah, there's a new website for Mastery, but I'll send you to the old site, which you'll find both. And that one is powerseductionandwar.com. The and is spelled out. So powerseductionandwar.com. And that'll send you to my Twitter, to my Mastery site, to my Facebook stuff, all the crap that you'll want.
Robert, you've been brilliant. We really thank you for your time, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Yeah, man, the 48th Law of Power, when I got that 10 years ago, and to actually be able to chat with you, man, it's been really awesome. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Oh, awesome. We'll speak soon, Robert.
Okay, take care.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. So that was one on your bucket list, man.
For sure, man. To hear him speak, his delivery, how calm, how he illustrates and describes things. Robert, I mean, this man speaks 4 or 5 different languages. It was interesting to see him explain, you know, his newest work. You know, I've met some writers who don't want to share that until it goes live.
Yeah.
So I was, you know.
I guess he puts it out there, and he's now got, like, a responsibility for his own fans that, like, he's got millions of fans.
He has a duty. Right. I'm glad you said that number. For a book to be downloaded 1 million times.
That's crazy.
That is crazy, because in this day and age of free content, and people being able to, I guess, duplicate things.
He's got 5.
Yeah, 5. It's crazy. And if you guys haven't, if you're in the business, if you're into fitness, we, you know, a lot of coaches listen to the show. Basically, if you're writing your own checks, or if you one day want to put yourself in a scenario that you're running the whole thing, read some Robert Greene books, man, because they're really going to allow you into the headspace of what it takes to, I guess, I don't like saying one-upping, and I brought it up in the interview, but maybe having an advantage,
but I guess,
or
like,
giving yourself the best opportunity to succeed.
I think he's a great example. Do you know what I mean? He didn't find his path until his mid-30s. Mm. Do you know what I mean? He always knew what his talent was, but...
But it didn't come to fruition, right?
Yeah, exactly. In terms of showing it to the world and showing in him actually, you know, it being his everyday job.
Yeah.
So now it's not even a job for him. It's like...
Oh, it's his passion.
It's his passion. And so that's what he was searching for. That's why he had, 50 jobs through his whole life. He was trying to find out what... He can wake up for, you know what I mean?
And you want to be around that. Like, you mentioned something to me the other day, and it made me more aware of, like, you're the type of dude I need to be around. Like, you want to be around people who are constantly searching for what they're supposed to be doing. You never want to be around that person who knows everything. You don't want to be the expert. You don't want to be the guru. You want to be the coach. The coach is always learning. The expert and guru knows everything. Mm. So there's no room for growth. And it takes going through and experimenting and failing and figuring things out and, you know, turning your back on some ideas to put all that together. And you just got to have faith in yourself.
Yeah.
To one day those pieces line up, because hindsight's always 20/20. You can't, it reminds me of the Steve Jobs speech. He said, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking back.
Yeah.
You really need to believe in yourself and believe in your work. And
I think you make a great point about being open to learning from something. I think that's in terms of someone can take away something from this episode right now and learning, you know, be open to learn.
Yeah.
You never too. It doesn't matter if you're Bill Gates or you're Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
They are always still open to learning something new. And, you know, sometimes it might just be a 5-minute coffee. You know, who knows?
And that's what we're doing here, man. Once again, another aha moment while we're on the show. That's what you and I are doing with each interview. We're learning.
Yeah, man. Like
by interviewing these people,
I'm willing to learn from anyone. I don't think just because I've got a master's in something or I've done something for a long time, I'm hands down, I'll be more than happy to listen to anyone that ever comes up to me.
And Robert's what, our 79th, 78th?
Yeah, it's in episode 79.
So
man,
just in the podcast umbrella, we've had over 79 hours of upskilling, 79 hours of mentoring leadership by reaching out, asking these people to come on our show in relevance, asking for help.
Yeah. Yeah, so
you know what I'm saying?
We've had 79 episodes, and there's something for everyone. Like what I was saying to, I had lunch with one of my friends, Ben. Ben's a Lord Shanahan.
Lord Shanahan, episode 2 in a row that he gets a shout out.
Yeah, and what Ben was saying to me was, at first he only listened to all the boxers because boxing's his passion.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's
yeah.
what he really loves to do. But then he started listening to the other ones, and what he worked out was that, even though, like, for example, he was really praising the episode with Bedros Koulian.
Yeah, I love that one.
And what he was saying is, well, I don't want to open a fitness business, but I might want to open a business. But what the biggest thing was the mindset that he was dishing out, do you know what I mean? That,
yes, creating an avatar.
Yeah, that can be applied. And I think a lot of our guests have that. And I think that's probably a reason why, you know, whether you're your first time listener right now or you're 100th time listener or 79th listener yeah. right now, I think you should go back and listen to something which you don't think that you'll be interested in.
Oh, you've inspired me just now by telling me that story, man. I kind of needed to hear that. What you just said was spot on about being able to – I could literally sit here and tell you, almost take you through, probably since Tate Fletcher, something I learned from each one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, we had Tate, we had Graham, we had Bornstein, Romanello, Lucas, and then we Austin. But everyone – it's weird how our memory works. I've been able to – keep something with me. And it, for the guys listening at home, man, we can't emphasize enough how much we appreciate the support. So I'll use Rogan to compare what the story for me. So I've been listening to Joe probably for about 5-6 years. He's had his show. He's the pod father, man. He's, you know, his podcast is the number one animal. But when I used to just listen to his show just that when he had on like physicists and writers. And I would never listen when he had the comedians on. You know, he's a stand-up. He has probably 70% of his episodes are stand-ups. But now, you know, I'm not saying I listen to every single episode, but I don't look at it specifically for the title. I look at it, you know, if I have some time to learn, I'll listen to it. And if I could take one thing away, which usually happens, whether it's I'm listening to, like, for instance, Bert Kreischer, a very famous comedian, Rogan's best friend. And during his episode, he tells a story about, you know, Dr. Clear, who I reached out to get him on the show. I only heard of him, James Clear, out of Ohio, because Kreischer brought him up.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So it's not necessarily going into it with the headspace of just listening for the guest, but have that headspace of listening to it because you're putting yourself in a scenario to learn. As long as you're not, you know, Rogan's not for everyone. He works for me. You know, Ferris is a good one.
Yeah.
But whatever works for you is what we're saying. Don't limit yourself to learning.
Okay. So seeing he's an author, what we should do is maybe – I'll say two books they should read, I feel, and then maybe you can recommend a couple of books.
Ooh, right on the spot?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
I'll go first. Like, yep. My favorite book is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Carnegie? Why should I get it?
I think it just opens your eyes. A lot of the things in that book you already do, but you don't do it on a consistent basis. And it opens your eyes on how you should treat other people before you should think about yourself, if you get what I mean.
Be selfless.
It opens your eyes to thinking from their point of view before your point of view, and then trying to develop a way for you to work together instead of in conflict.
Excellent. Do you want to do the second one, or do you want me to tell you one of
mine? Probably the one I only finished this last week was The Alchemist.
Oh, Policella.
Yeah.
You finally read it?
I finished it. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
You got it for a gift for Christmas, you know, right?
I did for my sister.
I read that when I was... Dude.
But it was... you know what? That book was the first roller coaster ride, if you get what
I
mean.
Be the observer.
Because it was kind of like it started real quick. And then it dipped.
Yep.
And it was losing my interest again. And then all of a sudden he meets the chick in the desert.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it comes back.
Yeah.
And then it goes a little bit from dull again. And then it picks back up.
Yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, it was an interesting book. And the way it finishes, I won't spoil it, obviously. But
yeah, spoiler alert. If you haven't read The Alchemist, turn the show off now.
Yeah, okay. Cool book, and recommend that highly, man.
Yeah, so mine are going to be a little bit different. You know, I love the development stuff. I love the allegories. Allegory, that's a weird word I always struggle with. But I like, if you're into, you know, origin of humanity, which I love, finding where we come from. There's an awesome book called The Magicians of the Gods by Graham Hancock. And I could talk.
A big book, or
it's in depth, man, and it's all about when in the 1980s Graham went to Egypt with a archaeologist named Dr. Robert Schock, and what their whole purpose and intent was to study the erosion marks on the Sphinx and the three pyramids of Giza, the three giant ones. There's hundreds of them in Giza, but the three main giant ones. And what they proved was that these erosion marks on these pyramids and the Sphinx were from water. So then they brought in a climatologist that were able to study the glaciers and be able to say that the last time there was water in the Giza Plateau was 7,000 years ago, 7,000 BC. The Egyptians were only here 2,500 years ago. So they disproved what Egyptologists are currently teaching, that who built those pyramids. And so that's what the book's about. And it's really fascinating about how these pyramids and these huge markings of like sculptures, these archaic like megalithic structures were built aligned with the solar system. So
how's the book written in, like, is it something that a normal person,
it's a story, it, I mean, for
like,
sure,
is it in normal English that yeah. you don't need like no, you further don't. Breakdowns
no you don't you no. don't read it it's and then the second one is McKenna, and I love Terrence McKenna. If you guys listen at home, McKenna, he passed away in the mid-90s. He was a professor at University of Berkeley. He did psychology, and he was really, really into plant-based psychedelics. And he was studying how in the world – so in the late 70s, he was super fascinated. His studies were all about how in the world – so the Earth is, we'll say, 4 billion years old. We've been broad-shouldered bipedalists, so upright walking. Now, this is from the evolutionary aspect. So bipedalist walking for about 4 million years. All of a sudden, 2 million years ago, the brain size of the chimp, that current modern man 2 million years ago, doubled out of nowhere. And then from that point on, since it doubled from 2 million years ago to only 30,000 years ago, we were cave dwellers. We are hunters and gatherers. We were nomadic. But something significant happened. 30,000 years ago was the first time we started seeing cave art. You know, consciousness started going to a different level, and then just 10, 15,000 years ago, we started building cities. And mm-hmm. McKenna's like, what the fuck? How the hell did this happen out of nowhere? What caused this? What was the spur of this? So Food of the Gods is about this flood that happened 30,000 years ago. The waters receded. The cavemen who survived came out of the caves and started living off of the grass that had grown from the receding waters. And in that grass contained, ready for this? A psilocybin mushroom. And his theory, which is just a theory, is called the stoned ape theory, is that at this time, 30,000 years ago, was the first time modern day men at that time had taken their consciousness to a different level. And that's when the art started showing up. That's when we started thinking differently. It's a really, really interesting book. I'm not saying I believe it 100%. I mean, McKenna did a lot of drugs, but it's just kind of interesting to think about a lot of these unanswered questions about the origins of humanity.
And I guess they're all theories, right?
For sure. But everything's a theory.
It opens your mind, because we don't know, like, unfortunately, we weren't there on day one, so we can't prove really to 100% fact, can we? But it's good just to think about it.
Yeah, and in the spirit of McKenna, I'll leave you with a quote. And if you know McKenna, you know how he speaks, so I'm going to butcher his style of speaking. Our duty as humans is to create culture, not consume culture.
Very good. How old is this guy?
Huh? White, but he spoke.
I mean, he's American.
Yeah, you should listen. YouTube him speaking. He's the one who started this. What is it, the Ideas of the Dangerous Minds in Mexico in the early 90s, these groups of really, really, really powerful thinkers who are really on the like that edge of the fence of where we are coming from, experimenting with plant-based psychedelics such as psilocybin. If you look at all ancient civilized cultures at the highest level, the Egyptians had a psychedelic flower called the mandrake, which was a tea. The Aztecs had one, the peyote out of the cactus.
Yep.
The Amazonians used ayahuasca. It's all relevant, and it's just interesting to think about. So if you want to get your learn on, check out Terrence McKenna. Go down that rabbit hole.
Definitely. We've got 4 books for you, so yep, there you check go. Them out. My mom actually gave me a little secret. She said if you join the library, all the new books are in there.
Full boy?
Yeah.
What, hold on. All the new books?
Yeah.
Like Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek is in there?
I think so.
Oh, that's a great one. I love it. Really?
That's what she told me.
Good, man. We got to get a book in there soon, baby.
We got to get a library card.
Keep them eyes open. Keep them ears open. Books. About to drop. Boy.
Yeah, definitely. Guys, thanks for tuning in, supporting the cause. Just remember, quickly, jump on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. Get in touch. Johnny's at...
Yeah, check me out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Johnny Stofko. And also check us out on Facebook, The Vision Board Podcast. Where are you at?
Tristan Cannell Fitness, and just Tristan Cannell on Facebook. You know, give me an ad or send me a quick message, and I'd love to hear from you.
Give us a hashtag, The Vision Board Podcast. We love it.
Yeah. That's actually a good one.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's what I'm always hashtagging. Go to Insta and hashtag it. Support the cause. Support the movement. Get involved, people.
Definitely, guys. So just remember, also pick up your Onnit stuff. 10% off.
Vision board
is your code word. Also, your ebook. Guys, plenty of value in there. It's a free ebook that you can download straight from the website. www.thevisionboardpodcast.com, or you also can go to /ebook, free ebook. And what else can I say? We're providing the value every week.
Other than that, man, that was awesome, Tristan. It was awesome to share this experience with you, and you let's too, just keep bro. Rocking.
Yeah, my man. We've got next on the show, we've got Tim Robards. Tim, The Bachelor.
The Bachelor.
But apart from The Bachelor, you know, he's very talented.
Actually The
he's
Bachelor,
he's got a doctorate.
Guys.
He's a practicing chiropractor, TV personality, speaker. So he's
someone entrepreneur, businessman, yeah, educated.
We'll be picking his brain on lots of different topics. So, guys, make sure you tune in soon.
Yeah, it's going to take our show once again down. Just add more legs to what we're already providing. Give us more experience dipping into different circles and getting in the headspace of a guy that was basically put in a scenario for maybe months of surrounding with cameras and TV and women. It just sounds awful, doesn't it?
That sounds really bad.
Yeah. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed, Robert.
We'll catch you soon, guys.
Peace. Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.